This is John Floridis, and you're listening to Musicians Spotlight. On today's program, we bring you back-to-back two profiles of very distinct and unique songwriting talents, James McMurtry and Mark Cohn. Both of these programs in back-to-back years were selected as the best non-commercial program of the year by the Montana Broadcasters Association. We're going to get right down to it with a man called the fiercest songwriter in America, James McMurtry.
I got a cup of black coffee so I don't get lazy. I got a rattle in the dashboard driving me crazy. And if I hit it with a fist, it'll quit for a little while. Gonna have to stop and take a piss in another mile. Headed into town, gonna meet you at the mercantile. Take you to the sun, it gets you grinning like a crocodile. I got a hole in the floorboard sucking in fumes. I leave the hitchhiker standing cause I hadn't got room. Well, he looked kind of scary, so I didn't like him anyway. Could have been a con from the state prison runaway anyway. Probably hadn't showered in a couple days. No one but a fool would have given him the time of day. Yeah. Just listen close, I'll tell you how I feel. You need to know so. Anywhere around. And I'm smoking in the town like a Molotov cocktail. Rag in the gas cap, flapping loose, never fail. Cell phones down cause he didn't get to check a mail. How am I gonna find you now? How am I gonna find you now? In a rag in your belt loop. Guys is hovering around the bar like gulls on the ocean. At the end of your shift, just in case you got the notion, watch you washing all the glassware and poetry in motion. I'd have roped the moon for you. How am I gonna find you now? Pressure pill with a Red Bull. Hit the city limit sign and I'm blind and I'm seeing red. Uniroyal tire on the right rear throwing tread. Y'all see the x-rated scene running in my head. Big as a baby's arm. How am I gonna find you now? How am I gonna find you now?
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome back James McMurtry. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to be able to have an interview face-to-face, as we talked about beforehand. We had you on the show a couple years ago. Actually, it was 2012. We did a phone interview. It's great to have a chance to visit with you face-to-face and get a chance to talk shop with you. Complicated Game is the most recent album. It's very recent as we record this in June 2015. One of the things I wanted to ask you is if you are still playing your guitar. The reason I'm joking is because...
Relatives always ask.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I remember. One of the highlights from the interview before was how you were saying that some of your relatives were asking if you were still doing that, as if it was something you grow out of.
Yeah, they kind of want me to get a real job, I guess. I don't know.
Still to this day?
Well, they don't understand that it is a real job. It's a lot of work anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's, you're pretty well into the game. I'd say stick with it. Stick it out. Well, let's talk about complicated game. And I know that there's some things that you kind of went about different with this project. As I recall,
I brought in an outside producer on this one. I produced my last four or five records myself and had kind of run out of tricks. I was reusing stuff that I learned from other producers, and it was time for some fresh blood. So I brought in C.C. Edcock, and he brought in Mike Napolitano, and they had a whole different approach. Usually I'd take a band in the studio, I'd cut, guitar, bass, and drums at the same time, and kind of get a live feel. This time we did it piece by piece. It's like a sound painting. Mm. I'd cut vocal and guitar, and then I'd replace the guitar, and then I'd replace the vocal, so we had clean tracks on everything, and then we'd put drums on. It was a pretty tedious process, but it works pretty well.
That must have been kind of uncomfortable a little bit to get out of your normal routine.
Yeah, I wasn't in my comfort zone, but that makes you think different, and it can do good things for you.
Well, one of the things that really struck me just right from the start, the very first tune, I think that's got to be, in a catalog of some tremendous material, that tune's fantastic.
Copper Canteen.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that tune. And sonically, one of the things that just struck me was just a balance of sound in a lot of different ways. There's a grittiness to it, and yet I hear kind of musically, it's sort of a vulnerability almost. And that seems to kind of match what's going on lyrically. Yeah. Is that conscious or just something I'm hearing?
I'm not sure how that music fell together. I wasn't there for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I'd come in and do my part, and then we'd have to go out on the road. It used to be that we toured to promote record sales. Now we make records to promote tour dates.
Right.
Because, if we got a new record out, then I can get on the radio and talk to you, and the print guys will write about me, and the people will know I'm coming to town. They'll come to the clubs. So, we can't afford to stop for 6 weeks and just record like we used to. So, I'd go in and cut a couple of songs and go back on the road, and then maybe the next month I'd bring in the rhythm section and have them do some stuff. Mm. And in the meantime, CC and Mike would be, listening to the tracks and thinking, well, okay, what are we going to do with this? We could have Ivan Neville sing harmony on it. I'll call Ivan. That's what you can do in New Orleans. So they did. I'd have a whole other record.
Talk about a little bit what's going on lyrically with this song. Lyrically, it's very compelling.
I think I got it mostly from driving around the Great Lakes region, where there's lots of drawbridges and ice fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of a late middle-aged marriage song, really. I don't know really where I got all the ideas. Somehow the protagonist became a hardware store owner that's about to close up and retire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. See, the way I write songs, I get a couple of lines and a melody, and then I think, okay, who said that? And then I try to envision the character that would have said that, and then from the character I can come up with a story.
Hmm.
And I can put that into a verse-chorus structure.
Again, lyrically, one of the things that struck me was that juxtaposition of the protagonist expressing a... There's a bravado in some of his statements. I'm gonna deer hunt. This is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna be out ice fishing. But then that moment when they're lying together and he tells her, he woke up and he holds her close, or she holds him close.
That's kind of how good long term relationships are sort of like that. It's not always fireworks, and it can get stale, but it also is sustaining in a way. And I guess I was trying to address that.
2, 3, 4. Honey, don't you be yelling at me when I'm cleaning my gun. I'll wash the blood off the tailgate when deer season's done. We got one more weekend to go, and I'd like to kill one more doe. they'll shovel the sidewalk again, 'cause you're still in a stoop. And I bet the bridge tender's widow won't mind that I can't please you. She sure got the run of the men out here where the pickings are thin and there's not much to do. Turned into our parents before we were out of our teens. Through a series of Chevys and Fords, the occasional spin round the floor at the copper canteen. Now the big boxes out on the bypass are shaving us thin. I guess we'll hold on a couple more years till the pension kicks in. Then we'll sell all the stock in the store, leave only the lock on the door. Up at night in the grip of a fright, and you hold me so tight to your chest, and your breath on my skin still pulls me back in till I'm weightless and then I can rest. So if Monsignor should pull you aside as you're leaving the church, and I'm out on the ice dropping lines for the walleye and perch, tell him it's not your job to bring me to the fold, and I'd rather stand out in the cold. And honey, I know the wood pile's low and you can't close the flue, so I'll split up a couple more chords for the winter times.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with James McMurtry. I hear the term landscape come up in descriptions of your music quite a bit. And I think most of the time I see that it's coming from a lyrical standpoint. Do you write in terms of musical landscapes, or do you see or try to envision musical landscapes?
I'm not sure what a musical landscape is.
I'm not sure I do either. I'm just kind of tossing that out there.
I use geographical landscapes for sure. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of what I write through the windshield, because we spend a good bit of time on the road now. I guess sometimes I'll hear a sound in my head that I want to get to.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm getting to. I want to just interject, too, when you mentioned seeing things through windshield. I want to encourage folks to sign up for your Facebook page, because you always have some good photos, which literally are taken through, nothing fancy. Yeah. Just here's literally, see the bugs on the windshield and the whole thing.
Seemed like the iPhone 3 had a better camera. It definitely had a better notes app. I wrote this whole record on an iPhone 3.
On an iPhone. Wait, let's go back to this. You wrote the whole record on an iPhone 3.
Pretty much, yeah, because it had that notes app that looked like a legal pad with right font.
Yeah, and I like the yellow with the black icon.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I got to get it. I think there's one you can download that's very similar. I haven't written near as much since I switched to the iPhone 4.
What interests you beyond the musical world? I know we've talked a little bit about some of the things that you're interested in, but...
What interests me? I like to hunt when I can and fish when I can. Haven't done near enough of it in the last couple of years. I'm interested in, politics and what makes the world turn. I'm not that knowledgeable about it, but I try to pay attention.
But I should refer listeners as well. I'll mention this now, your website, jamesmcmurtry.com. You've got a blog there. And I found your latest blog entry really interesting and very compelling. Let's just maybe give listeners an idea of what the latest blog was about.
I don't blog very often, but Dick Metcalf.
Yeah. Can we talk about this a little bit? Because I thought this was very interesting.
Well, sure, yeah. He wrote the gun law column for, Guns and Ammo for a long time. He basically said that, rights and privileges are two different things. We get a license to drive a car, but we don't get to drive it over the speed limit unless we want to get pulled over. Mm-hmm. There are limits on what we can do. We don't have total freedom in anything. He'd gone through concealed carry in Illinois, which requires something like 16 hours of training. And he didn't see anything wrong with that. He said, why shouldn't we know how to use, if they're going to issue us a license, they're going to want to know we know how to handle a gun. Mm-hmm. And he was just immediately fired for that. Well, and people claiming he didn't know anything. Well, this guy, he's taught law at Cornell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's helped draft. He's been in the middle of it. He knows gun law better than anybody, and he gets fired for pulling that up.
Well, I guess the reason I bring it up is the idea of the right to bear arms not being infringed versus being regulated, which is kind of what you were speaking to.
The hue and cry now is that any regulation is infringement. I don't know. I don't know where you draw the line.
There's a lot of ways to go with this, and I guess even more to the point of what I'm getting to, and what came to me through the blog was just the concept of reason and objective thought in today's culture and when it comes to any issue.
And debate.
And debate, exactly.
We don't get to have debate.
Exactly.
Well, it's because, we're divided up into cults, basically. And if you violate cult doctrine, you're out of the cult.
Right.
That's how it goes, and that's what he did. I mean, and Guns and Ammo can fire whoever they want to. They're a company. Uh-huh. But I don't know. I thought he was a good writer.
Well, it seemed to me to be very much related to how I see your work. I see and hear that objectivity, that rational thought. It's your music, though I think sometimes people will put it in a particular category, and we may have even talked about this last time, with a tune like Can't Make It Here. They're going to make some assumptions. Okay, well, this is James, and this is pretty much, he's in this cult. He's with our cult. And yet, would those folks be surprised to know, you're, like you said, you're a hunter, you like guns, you read the gun and ammo. To me, that makes you a more interesting person, really, and in some ways, maybe more better suited to absorb what's going on in the world and then write about it.
I don't know. People should be nuanced, I think. I mean, my father hunted. He didn't hunt deer, but he hunted birds, and he's a full-on socialist. that doesn't fit the mold these days.
Right.
Skies are taller in Louisiana. The skies are wider in New Mexico. The skies in Texas kind of split the difference. Don't suit me no matter where I go. I ain't got a place in this world. I ain't got a place in this world. I know rivers run east out of West Virginia, rivers run west down in Tennessee. The river runs north out of South Dakota. None of that makes a damn to me. I ain't got a place in this world. I ain't got a place in this world. I know me where I'm headed, I'll just grin. Don't ask too many questions, and I'll be coming back to stay. You know not to ask me where I've been. And I'm looking up at a constellation, looking down at the frozen ground, looking out for all my interests, looking in just brings me down. I ain't got a place, I ain't got a place in this world. I ain't got a place, I ain't got a place in this world. No, I ain't got a place, I ain't got a place in this world. I ain't got a place, got a place in this world, I know.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with James McMurtry. I wanted to ask you a little bit about where you're at in life. That may sound like a Barbara Walters question, but as I looked at the bio and I realized, you know, we're pretty much the same age, and just how you're kind of feeling in sitting here in the world being 53. And I want to kind of go off on a little bit more and talk a little bit about your son being now a musician as well. But maybe let's just start with the concept of just how you feeling just in general with where you're at in the world.
A little bit lost. Technology has gone past me and gone past a lot of stuff in my life. I recently, my lawyer passed away. He was trying to figure out how copyright law could catch up with modern technology, and he was pretty well convinced that it just can't, you know. There's no way. I don't know that that matters much. Once the Chinese take over the world, this copyright's not going to matter anyway. It's like my grandparents weren't very good drivers because they were raised horseback. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to feel like them with computers. Mm-hmm. I can't really quite get my head around it.
Well, I love the quote. At some point, you said there was just a few minutes in your life where in between being Larry's son and Curtis's dad, and those are really good few minutes.
Oh yeah, yeah, well, you know, Curtis is with it. He can handle the technology or whatever else. He's used to the pace of change, which you know, we started out with hardwired dial phones, and now we're carrying computers around in our pockets
that are more intense than what got us.
You know, and not everybody. Most of my generation is fine with it, seems to be. But I don't know. I was pretty happy with that dial phone. I wasn't expected to be on notice every minute of the day.
Yeah, you know? No doubt.
If I wanted to talk to somebody, I could go find a payphone. That's fine.
And Curtis is also pursuing music as well, right?
He is. Yeah, he's a good songwriter. He's got a music comp degree, so he can see the big picture. He's intimidating to be on stage with. Because he just knows so much more music than I do.
When he was younger, was that something that you tried to foster? Or
I didn't push him in any direction. I kind of figured he'd go to law school. I guess he still could. I mean, he loves to argue and he has a sense of justice. But he's also a good songwriter, so if that's what he wants to do, fine.
That would have seemed to have been in some ways fitting that the grandson of Larry McMurtry and the son of James McMurtry, a famous author, famous songwriter, and he becomes a lawyer.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just to throw the whole thing off.
That's what I saw in him when he was very young, but you know, that's not what he wanted to do, so.
Spend a dollar quick as a dime. She goes commando most all of the time. And she writes a fine prose, I'd have to say, finer than mine. These things I've come to know. These things I've come to know. thanks to tango, no matter the cost. 'Cause she likes to spin till it leaves her a little bit lost. These things I've come to know. These things I've come to know. Made me so brazen and bold. At the time I was feeling so wasted and old. And I can't dance a lick, but sometimes I can flat rock and roll. These things I've come to know. These things I've come to know. And you can yell at the top of your lungs for a round, but late in the shift, she'll suffer no clowns. And if you're wondering if the tattoo goes all the way down, she can change her own fuse, she can fix her own car, she can back down a drunk and run him out of the bar. She don't scare easy, but she can be pushed too far. These things I've come to know. These things I've come to know. These things I've come to know.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with James McMurtry. Complicated Game is the name of the most recent recording project, and jamesmcmurtry.com is the website where you can find out more about what James is doing, see where his shows are going to be next, and also find out more information about Complicated Game and all of his other recordings. It's a real treat to get a chance to speak with you voice to voice and have you again on Musician Spotlight.
Well, thank you. I'll be back.
I mostly know the drill. She expects to be remembered as a pretty woman will. And when she's not, she's angry, and somehow I'm to blame. Don't know if I can hang in such a complicated game, but she loves me.
You've been listening to an encore broadcast of an award-winning 2015 visit with James McMurtry. We'll be back with more Musicians Spotlight, next turning our attention to Mark Cohn. This is John Floridis. Welcome back to Musicians Spotlight. In this half hour, you'll hear the second of two back-to-back award-winning encore programs, this time featuring Mark Cohn.
Writing you this letter from some old hotel. I can feel the distance between us. From Spanish Steps to the Liberty Bell. I know the angels have seen. They see you down on 7th Avenue while you're just hanging by a thread. And I'm sitting in a lonely room without a view, wishing I was there with you instead. World with me.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and I'm very pleased to welcome Mark Cohn. Good to see you.
It's good to see you. Thanks.
We want to tell listeners that we are doing this interview backstage at the Bitterroot Performing Arts Center in Hamilton, and as we're recording this in late January, what is today's date? The 17th? Yeah, 17th. 17th of January, 2015. Okay. Many listeners will undoubtedly be familiar with Mark's music, beginning with Walking in Memphis from his self-titled debut album, which earned Mark a Best New Artist Grammy back in the early 90s. Mark has had a long and sustained career since then, and we're going to be talking a great deal about some new recordings as well. Mark, I wanted to start with your most recent single, because this is pretty big news as we're recording this, The Coldest Corner of the World. Really enjoyed this piece. Talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, this is the first new song I've released in almost 7 years, which kind of boggles my mind, even though I'm used to my turtle pace with writing and releasing new music. And as is often the case, it was inspired by somebody actually giving me an assignment. There was a movie that still has yet to be released. It's now in the editing stage, I think, a documentary called Tree Man. And the director literally approached me on my son's Little League baseball field and said, I'm a fan and I would love to see if you would write a song for our movie. And he started to describe the narrative of the movie, which was immediately compelling and familiar to me. It's all about these guys, the New Yorkers, and I'm one. I've been on the Upper West Side in various places for 3 decades, I think. Every winter, these men and women come down from Canada to sell Christmas trees on Broadway. And for weeks and weeks, New York City is their temporary home during this kind of magical, interesting time in New York, right? And they've left their families behind and now have really befriended a lot of people in Manhattan. Anyway, the movie follows one particular tree man who has become very friendly with an old woman who's a Holocaust survivor. And they have forged a really interesting, lovely bond. But having not seen the movie, I can't tell you much more than what was described to me in the narrative. All I knew was he said, we need a holidays. I'm asking all kinds of songwriters to write a holiday song. And I'm not even going to tell you that it has to be happy or cheerful. And I said, oh, good, then I'm in. I'll give it a shot. Because the idea of writing an up-tempo holiday song was very foreign and scary to me. And I just came up with this song after kind of letting it ferment for a couple of months, the idea of what would I write about. There was even a second I went to meet with Pat Metheny, who's another Upper West Sider. And Pat, to my amazement, agreed to write music to my lyrics if I came up with anything. And unbelievably, I did come up with something. But I also came up with the music. And
very interesting.
I didn't want to lie to Pat. I said, I would love to collaborate with you on something. I hope we do it. But I think I found the music I want for this song. Anyway, one day, hopefully there'll be a Pat Metheny, Mark Cohn song. That would be thrilling. But this is this tune I wrote in very short order once I got the idea. And it's the end title song of the movie.
Well, the man says the front is moving in. It's coming from the Arctic on a bone-chilling wind. But that ain't news to me, it's the way it's always been. 'Cause I live on the coldest corner in the world. A tree man came down from Canada today. He smiles at me and now I know winter's here to stay, but I don't need no pine tree to remind me anyway, 'cause I live on the coldest corner in the world. Somebody help me please, I'm suspended in a deep freeze, and I don't need the savior, I need 85. Loves me.
listening to that tune this morning, I was struck by a number of things, but one of the things that struck me was the consistency in your work that goes over now a couple of decades. Always superior musicianship, and done in such a way that it is very tasteful, but also very emotive. And I guess what I'm getting at is sometimes I know there are other singer-songwriter albums, for lack of a better, I'm being a little generalizing here, the musicians, you can tell they've told the musicians, like, stay out of the way of the song, to the point where it's almost too generic. But with your work, it seems like there's always this really nice balance of, no, the musicians don't get in the way of the song, but they're still very present and accounted for, and it's really emotive, tasteful playing.
Well, I appreciate that, man. That's very, that means a lot to me, because almost as much as my writing, I've been focused on my record making. I mean, I'm really, I've always been compelled by great records. You know, my favorite artist, Paul Simon, is the first one that comes to mind. Such a brilliant songwriter, such a compelling singer, but the records are so, just over the last 50 years, the one great record after another, where the musicianship is so stellar, but like you said, never gets in the way, but it also keeps the records from being generic and boring. You can be too precious about a singer-songwriter going, okay, here's the guitar part, here's the vocal, everything needs to fit around that. And I made one record with a guy named Charlie Sexton where the whole approach was just the opposite. Consciously made a record called Join the Parade where whatever it was that I wrote the song on wasn't featured. So that everybody else could kind of find their way into the song. I was playing, but when it was time to mix the thing, we put what I was playing way in the back of the mix. So I've always been interested in how do we make an interesting record? Because I am a singer-songwriter, but not necessarily fall prey to the trappings of what you described, which I'm very aware of and not interested in making generic records. So I'm glad you noticed.
Mark, speaking of an appreciation for fine records, that brings me to, of course, your project, Listening Room 1970, which you also work with John Leventhal as well. Let's talk about this project, because this had some real gems. And there's a great video I want to tell listeners, if you want to kind of get some background into hearing about how the thing actually started, the project started.
I didn't write any of the songs. It's a covers record. John had just produced The List for his wife, Roseanne Cash. And it was a beautiful record with a great concept, which was all these songs that Johnny Cash, Roseanne's dad, had told her she had to learn and be aware of if she wanted to be a songwriter. Mm-hmm. So they cut some of those, and it's a really compelling record, even though it's basically a covers record. And I immediately started thinking, I'd love to get back in the studio. It's been years. I don't have many original songs. Maybe I could do a covers record, but Johnny Cash wasn't my dad, so I better find a different theme. My dad was a pharmacist in Cleveland, so he wasn't going to be of any help whatsoever. So it was around 2009, John and I started talking about making a record. And there were all kinds of articles being written because it was the 40th anniversary of 1969, a seminal year in music, society, culture, right? So it was a big deal. And I immediately thought, wow, you know, if we make this record now, it'll be the 40th anniversary of 1970, which for me was actually an even bigger year musically, because I knew right off the cuff that maybe five or six of my favorite records of all time back then and to this day were made that year. Moondance by Van Morrison, Bridge Over Troubled Water, Neil Young's After the Gold Rush, which was a huge record for me, still is. Tea for the Tillerman by Cat Stevens, the first Leon Russell record, the first Eric Clapton record, the first Elton John record. I mean, Let It Be by the Beatles, the year they broke up. That was their swan song. I loved the concept of focusing on one year and just taking a snapshot of a year. To me, the idea of, you know, my favorite tunes from the 70s or the, you know, wasn't as compelling. And the minute we decided on that, we just started looking on, you know, on the lists on iTunes or Google or wherever we went, Wikipedia, to find out, you know, the songs that came out that year, and started messing with tunes we never would have thought of recording if it wasn't for the fact that it fit this framework we had built, right? And I never would have guessed the songs that would end up working the best, primarily because we were looking for a new way to do these songs.
In this video that's on your website, you guys talk about Wild World,
right,
by Cat Stevens.
Right.
And that was kind of the impetus. That was the tune that you kind of started with in terms of getting the basic template of what you were going to do. Because when you call it a covers record, I mean, anybody listens to it, it's not as if, you know, you're just trying to cop the tunes. You right. definitely rearrange them and reimagine them.
And that's the only way I was interested in the project at all. And that's part of what makes John so amazing, is because he has that musical ability to listen to something and make it his own. And yeah, I guess Wild World was the first one. I said, I don't know. It had already been covered a couple of times and other people had made it hits. But John immediately came up with this sort of jazzy, late night approach to it. And it was easy as can be to sing. And we were off and running. I mean, that was what we were looking for. How do we change these tunes? And can I sing them? You know I seen a lot of
it's breaking my heart in two, because I never want to see you sad, girl. Don't be a bad girl, but if you want to leave, take good care. Hope you make a lot of nice friends out there. Just remember there's a lot of bad ass.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm joined today by Mark Cohn. Mark, I wanted to ask you about a tune that you're obviously very well known for, which is Walking in Memphis. And certainly our listeners are going to go deeper than that. And I don't mean to say that they need to go deeper, because that tune, like your body of work, you know, it holds up. But I'm curious, because I've talked to a number of musicians who have had, you know, decades long, really fulfilling, great careers, but have this one song that kind of snuck through enemy lines, so to speak, you know, and got in there that just like, whoa, where'd this song come from? I'm thinking of Sean Colvin. A lot of people just think of Sonny Came Home. Chris Smither, of course, wrote Love Me Like a Man. Now, granted, it's a little different because someone else had the hit. Janice, Ian, you know, musicians who are just top-line songwriters and musicians. And I'm always interested to know what their relationship is like with that particular tune that's so, for mainstream public anyway, so identified with their work.
That's a great question. I mean, luckily, because I've heard it turn out differently and seen it, my relationship with Walking in Memphis is a deep and abiding one. That's the best way I can put it. It's my calling card, and I couldn't be prouder. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I've always, you know, often been asked, you know, you never had another big radio hit after that. And I love what you just said, you know, made it through enemy lines. It's so true. You know, if you make it through enemy lines once, you're, you know, it's an interesting thing. The essence of that song was really about the transformational power of music. That's what that song's about. And sort of displacement too. I was a Jew, but that night I was a Christian. I was a white boy in Al Green's church. I was lost, but I was found. You know, do I really feel the way I feel? I'd been so looking so long for my songwriting voice that even before I wrote the song, I had a sense when I got to Memphis that I might find it there. So in the end, I wrote the song about something that still connects with me, which is my love of music. Mm-hmm. I can sing about that forever.
The Muriel play piano down at the Hollywood, and they brought me down to see her. Then they asked me if I would do a little number, and I sang with all of my might. She said, "Tell me, are you a Christian child?"
The This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Mark Cohn. Mark, another thing that really came to my attention in looking back over your career and, more importantly, your life, is that, man, you're a survivor in a lot of ways, and not just professionally, as we've talked about, but very well-publicized, very public event where you had someone try to attack you and an attack on your life. Also, knowing that you lost both parents fairly early, mm-hmm. It's a pretty remarkable story, regardless of your music career. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just want to ask where you think that comes from.
Ooh. Well, you ask really good questions, man. I wish I'd been a little bit more prepared for these. I'm not sure where that comes from. I mean, you're right. I lost my mom when I was 2. She died very suddenly, probably a brain aneurysm. And my dad died when I was 12. So my stepmother, who my dad had remarried when I was 4, raised me. You know, that's the kind of stuff that either kills you or makes you a songwriter, hopefully. There's plenty of other options too, but I was lucky enough to be able to take a lot of the knocks I've had to face and turn them into my way of expressing myself and ultimately a career. But the real answer to your question, as simple as this may sound, if I'm really honest, I read a book a long, long time ago called The Drama of the Gifted Child by a psychologist named Alice Miller. Fascinating book, which I actually wrote a song based on called Let Me Be Your Witness, a song I wrote a few years ago. And in that book, Alice Miller says that the difference between a well-adjusted adult and a non-well-adjusted adult is that somebody in their childhood could see them for who they were. Mm-hmm. That could be their witness, that their lives weren't filled with only narcissists that couldn't see past their own faces. And I was lucky enough, despite everything else that happened to me, to have 3 older brothers, one of whom has really been my great friend, advocate, fill-in father. You know, he's about 20 years older than me.
Oh, wow.
But just as loving, compassionate, and warm a human being as you could ever meet. So despite everything my family went through and I went through, not just for me, for a lot of people in our family, he's been the person that's kept everything running and became not surprisingly a medical doctor. You know, in a way he couldn't save our mom, but he's been trying to save other people's lives for the rest of his life. And he has certainly saved mine. So I would say, you know, there's a lot of things that have taught me how to get through the tough times, but I couldn't imagine having done it without him.
Particularly, if I may ask, the incident where, I mean, if people don't know about it, you literally were shot at an attempted carjacking. That just kind of blows my mind that you could not only go forward in your life, but just put yourself in the public in the same way that you had been before. Was that part of, you know, a way to get past that was to just assume your regular life or what you had been doing and not have that taken from you?
Yeah, it was. I mean, there was a bunch of things I went through, obviously, emotionally. There was some post-traumatic stress, and I dealt with that. In fact, in a way, to be honest, it was pretty funny to go to therapy for post-traumatic stress because, you know, after 25 years of being in and out of therapy, this was the only time I walked in actually knowing the problem.
I'm only laughing because I saw the clip from the Ellen show where you said the same thing.
Exactly. It's true. I mean, that was a big difference. It's like, you know, everything with therapy can be so mysterious and multi-layered and I don't know where it started and doctor, it's so painful, but I really can't identify it. This was like, I was shot in the head. Of course I need to talk this through. You know, I shouldn't be here now. Why am I? It was pretty heavy. Now, I have to say one thing which made it a lot easier. If that had been something that wasn't just random like it was, but I had been targeted somehow, my reaction would have been totally different. You know, to come to grips with knowing somebody was really after you
right.
is one thing. Yeah. Knowing that it was just a random act of fate is another, and in a way that made it a bit easier, I think. But I knew that it was important to as soon as I could get back and just do what I do. And in a way, I've never enjoyed performing more since that incident.
Just call on me and I will testify. Let me be a witness. Let me be your
MarkCohn.com is the name of the website. I want to make sure listeners know that Mark spells his name with a C, MarkCohn.com. That's where you can find out more about what Mark's doing. And he's doing some great stuff. It's been a pleasure getting a chance to talk shop with you. I've hoped that you might come through the area for a number of years. So it's great to have you on the program.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much.
Put on my blue suede shoes and I boarded the plane. Touchdown in the land of the Delta Blues, in the middle of the pouring rain. I touched down in the land of...
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musician Spotlight, two back-to-back Montana Broadcasters Association award-winning encore programs featuring James McMurtry and Mark Cohn. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us on Twitter and on Facebook. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.